Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. That cut opening tonight's show was Sacred Alchemy by Diva Haley, and that's from her Sacred Alchemy CD. And happy Women's History Month. Do you know what might be going on in your town to celebrate? If you're planning to celebrate, please email me or send me a note in the chat room, which is now open. And if you'd like to call in and speak to me or my guest, the number is 718-766-4662. That's 718-766-4662. Tonight we have with us Teresa Morehouse discussing how our soul stories are vehicles to awareness and intuition. Teresa will discuss how archetypal stories speak directly to spirit and intuition, inspired by myth, legend, and deep living, rites of passage, spiritual awakenings, and paying dues. We'll chat about the alchemical marriage, the world tree, and feeding or facing the lions. Sound intriguing? I hope so. And I'll be sharing some excerpts from my new book, Goddess Calling, Inspirational Messages and Meditations of Sacred Feminine Liberation Theology, specifically the message, Resistance is Not Futile, drawing comparisons and similarities between the sacred feminine and the world of Star Trek. Scratching your head out there, I wonder? Then later tonight, after my guest, please stay tuned in for the What's the Buzz segment, talking about the bees buzzing around in my bonnet this week related to sacred feminine ideals, whether they're being supported or thwarted out there in the world today. But first, a word from Joe Carson and Dancing with Gaia, which helps me pay to keep Voices of the Sacred Feminine on the air. That said, if you like what you're hearing and you want to ensure the show keeps on the airwaves here at Blog Talk, please go to my website at KarenTate.com. Once you're there, go to my Goddess Store page, scroll all the way down to the PayPal buttons, and please make a donation of any amount. And thank you for your donations and for your kind emails that let me know what I'm doing here is making a difference. So now a word from Joe Carson.
Most people's psychic experiences are dreaming, and it's thought that it's the pineal gland making this chemical that does it. Now, this was the core finding that the pineal gland makes the hallucinogen. We all hallucinate, we all go into a state of consciousness that for me is the collective unconscious. This psychic state is the collective unconscious, which is that consciousness of the planet. What's called the chthonic mind, the mind of the earth. Because all peoples, all races, all tribes from the past and right around the world have myths and legends which use symbols and archetypes which are identical. Identical. Every human being experiences this state of consciousness, which is the dream mind. That symbolic, archetypal, exemplified by fairy tales or the creation myths and legends of all the different peoples. The symbols of them are the same, and to me that is the consciousness of the earth speaking to us.
Well, that was Serena Roney Dougal, PhD, speaking in Joe Carson's film, Dancing with Gaia. Dancing with Gaia explores the connections between earth energy, sacred sexuality, and the goddess as Gaia. It features 15 visionaries like Serena who give us tools to feel the life of the planet and understand those energies within and without, outside ourselves. The DVD comes with a 45-page mini book and costs just $20. You can get your own copy at dancingwithgaia.com. And if you haven't heard me say it, I have seen the film, and I really do believe it would make a great gift. And it's something you would probably really want to make sure you have in your library. Okay, so we are about ready to turn our attention to our first guest tonight, Teresa. I want to thank her for her patience and tell you a little bit about her before we start our chat. I think you'd probably call Teresa Morehouse a contemporary bard. She's also creatively called a narrative sculptor of multicultural women's stories. And she's going to chat with me about her first book, Soul Stories, about how stories are vehicles toward awareness. We'll look deeply into how we acquire knowledge through the use of stories and what symbols, such as the hand represents, why the tree of life represents our hopes and dreams, and we'll explore the lions, how we feed the lions, and what happens when we ignore them. And no doubt, Teresa will gift us with some of her stories. She has done an awful lot. Her educational background includes study at Cornell University. She's done a number of public and private works, and solo shows, group shows, pages of them, more than we can even talk about. And her website is teresamorehouse.com, Teresa without an H, T-E-R-E-S-A, morehouse.com. So, Teresa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Karen. I'm delighted to be here.
So, Teresa, what started you on this journey? I know your daughter is also an artist of sorts. She's a documentarian. Did she get that from you? And I wonder, did you get it from your mother?
You know, my mother told me a story a long time ago when I told her I wanted to be an artist. And she said, your grandmother wanted to be an artist, but it wasn't the right time. And I wanted to be an artist, and it was the Depression. She said, I'm glad somebody gets to be an artist.
Wow.
So it's there, but, you know, sometimes we don't always have the ability to discover it or explore it.
So does she, I would imagine, get a lot of, is she still alive? Does she get satisfaction from your work?
She certainly did. She just recently passed on this December.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Did you know, from an early age that this was for you? That and is it just sculpture that you do, or do you use other mediums?
You know, I've used many mediums, but sculpture has always been my main medium. And I started sculpting when I was 3 years old. I grew up in the Finger Lakes in upstate New York, and I reached into the banks of the clay, and the clay in that area doesn't have sand in it, so it sticks together. And I started making things. And I'm not sure that I developed many social skills that way, because I spent hours and hours making things. But by the time I was six, I was making life-size sculptures in snow in our yard. So, yes, my mother was really so helpful with this, because she would go around and get all different types of materials for me to work with, balsa wood from the boat companies, and old wallpaper samples, and glues, just any number of materials.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't throw anything away. I was going to make something out of it.
Right. You know, a friend of mine is a wonderful artist here locally, Kathy Farah, and I believe she called it, and this may be different from what you do, but I think she called what she did, because it sounds similar, collage art. You know, you really sort of have an eye for an assortment of items or textures, and you just put them together beautifully and, make something splendid from what somebody else would have thought was trash.
That's what I used to do. Yeah, I don't do that now, because now I'm doing cold cast bronze, and I'm really interested in telling stories. I found that when I used my sculpture to answer my psyche, then I learned some things about where I was at and what my position was in the world.
Why don't you explain that a little bit?
I'd love to do that. I'm going to give an example of one little piece I did that I call The Healer. And I saw this woman in my mind, and I went to the studio to make her. And she was like an old kind of European Slavic woman, probably in her 80s. This was a picture that I saw. She knew all the properties of plants and their harvest times and what their uses were. She had a labyrinth shawl on her. And she was the kind of woman that could take you either way. She could either walk you in through death, or she could walk you back to health. You just had complete trust in her. So I made this little piece. It's only like 3 inches tall. And about 6 months later, I was doing a show in Asheville, North Carolina, and that woman walked into my booth. And
wow.
I recognized her immediately, and I said, I know who you are. You're a healer. And she said, yes, she was a Reiki master, and she worked with cancer patients. So I gave her the piece. She's holding it in her hands, and she said, this looks like me. I said, yeah, I know you visited me. And that's how I like to work. If I can get out of self, then I've got an opportunity to enter into meaningful stories for me.
Right, right. Well, and here I thought the way you described the woman before you told the part about her walking into your show, it sounded like you described the goddess almost.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Wow. And I mean, was it always that way for you, you know? I mean, were you able to, you know, was this deep journey, this archetypal journey, or was it, or did that develop over time?
I think that developed over time because, there was always the concern in my 20s that I had met, you know, I was going to be an artist. I didn't have any choice. I would get sick if I didn't work. So, how was I going to make work? How was I going to sell work? How was I going to make work that would sell? And I discovered over years that that's not the question. That the real question about art, I think, is find the art that's inside you. Sculpt that. You will grow. Other people relate to it because let me give you an example of this. My daughter used to come to the shows with me when she was young, and she would say, Mother, why do women cry in your booth? And I said, it's because I've learned to speak the language of the soul. This is even before I realized I was doing it. But I said, when you're talking about real things, other people relate to that. And that was such a rich experience that by the time I was in my 40s, I wasn't interested in doing any other kind of art. Also, I have a background in philosophy, just as an interest, and in cross-cultural mythology. But I'm interested in not making sculptures about the myths. I'm interested in making sculptures about how we're living the myths.
Okay. Well, and just we've been talking about your daughter. You might want to mention who she is and what she does. She's been here on the show a few times.
She certainly has. Isadora Gabrielle Leidenfrost. Oh, I should say doctor. We pay a lot
yes.
of money for that.
and a lot of effort and hard work.
A lot of effort. We were just talking about the latest film, The Red Tent. 25,000 hours went into that film.
You know, these documentaries are such labors of love. I mean, looking at the Academy Awards and, you know, the short documentaries and I'm in a documentary myself right now, you know, Femme Women Healing the World by Emmanuel Etier. And, you know, it took him a couple years to make that. And, you know, they're such important films, and it's really such a shame that they can't get a wider release, that, you know, documentarians like Isadora and he, they all don't make it to the Academy Awards level, you know.
Right.
Most of them have to rely on grassroots to get any exposure, and so many of them have such important things to say that humanity really needs to hear right now.
Absolutely. And I want to mention the name of her film. It's called Things We Don't Talk About, and it's about the Red Tent Movement, which is a spiritually based movement for women's empowerment. And the film is joyful and inspiring.
Yeah, most definitely. Every woman needs to see it and talk about it and share it with their friends, most definitely. So, Teresa, as we're talking, if listeners went to your website, teresamorehouse.com, Teresa without an H, would they see some of your works to... Okay. So
even the
maybe
ones
listening
we're going to talk about. Yeah, they can see the healer that we're talking about or that I just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
There's another little piece I would like to briefly mention. It's called A Woman with Her Companions. And the reason I wanted to mention this is because of, you know, listening to your program in the beginning. You're talking about archetypal images, and I was inspired by Carolyn Mace, and I did this piece about four archetypes, the child, the victim, the saboteur, and the prostitute. And you have a woman who is standing in nature, and she is touching a feral wild cat. I'm not talking about the kind that sit in your lap, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are all these faces in the bushes, as you say, that are an example of the child, the victim, the saboteur, etc. And these are all archetypes that every human being has to deal with. And it's not just their negative aspects. I mean, we could be dealing with the divine child instead of the naughty child.
Mm-hmm.
But the
mm-hmm.
one thing I wanted to mention about this piece is, you know, my own animal nature kind of dragged me around for a number of years before I could get any kind of handle on it. And this piece is about a woman that is very centered. She knows what she wants, and she's the one that's making the decisions. And so even touching the wildness of her animal nature, there's a calmness there, and there's a release from that insanity that happened, at least for me in my younger life. I like to do pieces about that because I like to do pieces about things that every human being experiences.
You know, you
and
mentioned.
I like to talk about. Go
ahead. You know, you mentioned a moment ago that you learned to choose the art based on, I forget the word you use, life stories or soul stories, mm-hmm. things that people could relate to, maybe rather than something that you thought would be marketable. Did
exactly.
I understand you?
Absolutely,
And that must take an incredible amount of faith and certainty, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Because, you know, you're married and you have children and you need to get food on the table and you're not sure about, you know, whether your art is going to sell or not, it is so easy to compromise that or prostitute that. It takes a tremendous amount of, I remember, I'll give you an example. When I first went out to do some of the major shows in the country, these high-end fine art street fairs, I had other artists tell me that, well, when you go to Florida, you're going to have to do palm trees, and when you go to the mountains, you're going to have to do mountain scenes. And I said, no, I'm going to do my work because, you know, I have something to say. I've actually, in my 40s, I honestly feel like I found my voice, and that through these pictures, are these sculptures, they're three-dimensional sculptures, they're relief sculpture, I can reach other human beings. And hopefully, when they come into my tent, quite often they'll say to me, the energy is very spiritual in here. And, you know, there's so much that brings us down. I don't want to be part of that. I want to be part of the thing that lifts us up. And I want my work to do the same thing.
Yeah, it's almost like a spiritual healing through your work,
exactly.
Or at least raising the consciousness level. And someone said, when they talked about God, that or goddess, you know, either way, that goddess really is consciousness, you know, isn't
yeah.
she?
Yeah, Sophia.
Yeah. So you mentioned you had the dream, so you created the piece of the old woman.
Right.
How do you, I mean, it can't probably always be a dream. I mean, how do you decide what the
Sometimes
pieces are going to be?
I meditate, and I think that's important because there has to be some sort of control over, you know, the monkey kind of mind
mm-hmm.
so that you can have access to some ideas that might be worth dealing with. And And then, you know, these ideas just come into me and I start working. And some of them work, some of them don't. You know, everything I've done is not great. And I don't expect it to be. As a matter of fact, I want to make a comment about that. For years, perfectionism killed my work because I didn't think I could make a piece good enough. It wasn't saying enough or it didn't go far enough. And it was a wonderful release when I discovered that all I had to do is make the piece that was calling me, and when there wasn't any more juice to do it, to stop doing it and move on to the next piece. And
well, it was
that,
good that you were wise enough to listen to that.
I don't know if it was wisdom or if it was just determination or, you know,
or
nothing
exhaustion.
Was coming out of me with that. Exhaustion could have been a good one too, right?
You know, I mean, I know writing a book, I know for me anyway, maybe it's just that I rather short-term projects and long-term projects I get bored with. But, you know, I get bored with a book long before it's ready to go to the publisher, you know.
Writing a book is a lot of work.
Well, you sent me this gorgeous, it's a catalog almost, but it's not. You know, it's more a picture book of your work, and I'm looking through the beautiful pictures now, and I'm looking at the woman with her companions, and these really are incredible pieces. How big are these pieces, actually?
They vary in size. Like that little healer was 3 inches, and the woman with her companions is about 6 inches.
And they're all bronze?
And they're cold cast bronze.
Cold cast bronze.
Is resin and bronze powder.
And, well, the World Tree is just incredible. For listeners who are not looking at Teresa's website, she has a tree growing out of an index finger on a hand, and these words hardly do justice to this beautiful work. So I would really encourage you to go look at her work while we talk. And then there's this one, Initiation. Tell me about that one.
The Initiation is about this woman who's coming into manifestation, and she's bringing all the tools. You see, there's the birth-death cycle around her of all these people in this kind of circle.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that we come here with everything that we need. We are designed to live here. It's in our DNA. And I want to tell you, can I talk a little bit about that World Tree right now?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, good. The World Tree is, it's about facing any new direction in your life. Let's say you're getting married or you're starting a new job or you're becoming a parent or you're retiring, or it can be any new beginning that takes you into a completely new direction. And so we have these gates on either side of the piece. And we have this hand that would represent us. There we are, standing at the gates. I'll tell the story as marriage. So you're not married yet. You're standing at the gates, and out of your hand grows this tree of life, this world tree. And what that represents are your hopes and dreams as a result of this commitment that you're about to make. And, of course, that world tree, if there's in that piece also, at the tops of the piece, both right and left, there's the sun and the moon. Because when we have our hopes and dreams and they start coming out of us, they get changed by the actual atmosphere that they live in. I mean, we're not like stagnant people. We're living in a universe, and the universe has effects upon us. So that tree of life changes. So let's say you're at the gates, you're about ready to say, I do, I will, or whatever it is you're going to contract to say, and you walk through those gates. Now, this is the part of the story nobody ever tells us. There are lions on the other side of those gates, and they need to be fed now. If we feed them meaning, we're going to be able to walk consciously through all the rooms of our life, as you see in the background there up the piece, and we're headed toward the water of life, which is the very top of that, inside of that gate. And that's the very best that we can make out of the circumstances that we've been given. If we ignore the lions, we devour them. I mean, they devour us, excuse me. And if we feed them something that has no substance, then we turn to stone and become unable to feel at all.
Hmm.
And I know people know, you know, other people or even aspects of themselves that has that experience.
So what does it mean to feed the lion substance versus not feeding him substance?
Okay, let's take marriage. That was the example I gave. So, you know, I'm in love, I'm about to get, or I've just gotten married, and I think everything is going to be beautiful, okay? That wears off pretty quickly because it's so challenging to live with another person. And then, you know, not only do you have that, but you have some other things you have to deal with, like making a living, about who's going to cook the meals, who's going to do the laundry, who's going to wash the car and take out the garbage. And, you know, these things that are fun and exciting and you're looking forward to this year, by next year you're not going to be all that interested in them. And you
mm-hmm.
still have to do them. And, you know, you're with the same person day after day after day after day. And sometimes that gets boring. I mean, there are any number of challenges. Let's say one of the things that happens to women is quite often we are the ones that stay home to raise the children when the children come, and we kind of get lost. You know, we
lose yourself.
I remember telling the story about giving birth to a young couple. They were pregnant with their first baby, and they said, well, what are the lions that we're going to face? And there were a whole bunch of women in my tent at the time, and we were not going to talk about childbirth. That's not the deal. I said, one of the big lions you're going to face right now is you're going to be exhausted. You cannot imagine how exhausted you're going to be bringing in this new child into this universe. And another thing, I said, it's a really simple thing, but it hurts when nobody ever asks you any longer how you're doing. Not your mother, not your best friend, not even your husband. It's like, how's the baby? you're nurturing the new generation. And so, you know, what happened to you? You used to be the number one, and now you're gone. It's like,
right.
Now all the energy's put into the next generation. So it's any number of kinds of challenges. Let's say it's a job and a career. Let's say you just got the job of your life. You have wanted this kind of job all your life. And you go in and you start the job, and the person in the office next to you hates you. And they don't even know you, but they hate you. Now, you haven't been part of that at all, but that person in the next office wanted their best friend to get that job, and you took it, so they don't like you. But who do you think is going to be able to deal with that? You've got to
right.
deal with that. Because you're the one that's in the office. So there are lions at every level. And here's the deal about facing them consciously. If we don't deal with them, if we hide them and pretend they don't exist, they really will devour us. You know,
I think what you're maybe talking about, and tell me if I'm understanding you or not,
okay.
It's often, you know, we talk sometimes about the dark goddess lessons. You know, those are sort of the hard lessons in life that we have to learn to, you know, maybe find our strength, our courage to become our authentic self. But, you know, sometimes they're not easy. You know, they're experiences that steal us, that shape us. And and it's the difference between the person who faces the challenge and becomes better and stronger, or the person that maybe turns to drugs and drops out and blames everything on other people.
Exactly. That's when you just, you're not there anymore. You're lost at that point. You know, I want to tell you a quick story about this exact thing. As a young woman at 19, I went to India. And the Indian women, I went to study the temple sculpture. And the Indian women started talking to me about Kali energy. And they said, well, you know, you don't have any Kali energy in your culture. You can't, you know, anything can just walk into your life and you can't stop it. And they spoke of Kali as being personal to them. And, I mean, there's an aspect of Kali that's a war goddess, Durga.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me about 40 years, but I finally, I thought, we really don't, and you can't bring an Indian war goddess to the, you know, to the United States culture. They're not going to accept that. But after about 40 years, I made this little piece called Spirit of Discretion. And she has the ability to recognize what's coming into her life, and she makes the decision whether she wants it there or not. That's Kali energy.
Well, and you know, it's interesting that you said this, and I hope this doesn't take us off track, and if it does, we'll just skip it, we'll come right back. But you know, it's interesting that they told you that, you know, because, and, you know, I am willing to be absolutely wrong about this. Listeners, you can email me, send me a chat, whatever. But, you know, it always disturbs me that in India, the country that never lost their goddesses, you know, that it is so patriarchal and the women are so abused. You know, the women are suffering so much abuse there. It's almost as if, you know, when you said that, I thought to myself, well, where is their Kali energy? What are they doing with it? You know, because they certainly have not used it to temper the patriarchy.
They certainly haven't. I don't think you're off base at all.
And I mean, I know I talk to scholars sometimes who know more about, you know, the goddesses and Hinduism and stuff than I do, and they say that, you know, in India, the goddesses have become spousified or domesticated, you know. They're
yeah.
no more than somebody's wife now. You know, they have really lost their fullest potential and their full power. So I just sort of found it ironic that they told you that
isn't
you didn't
that
have any Kali energy.
Right. Well, I was 19 years old. I probably didn't have any Kali energy. I had no idea what that even was.
At 19, sure. Yeah, I can see that.
But, you know, these women that told me that, they were not, they were the rulers of their home.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that makes sense.
The men follow their instructions there.
Yeah,
that
makes sense, though, in fairness. In fairness. Well, you know, you said something before about perfection, and I want to just go back to that for a minute.
Okay.
You know, I had that very same realization some time ago that perfection, I think, thwarts us sometimes from doing things, from trying things. You know, we hold ourselves back because we think we can't do it perfectly or somebody else can do it better, and the result is sometimes we do nothing. And I'm a big fan of on-the-job training.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, you figure it out as you go. You know, you might not have all the answers and it might not end up perfect, but what is perfect? Isn't perfection in the eye of the beholder anyway?
Yes, and you know what I also discovered about perfection? Do you like people that are perfect?
No,
I can't.
Not really. They're not very interesting.
Absolutely not. Even be a goal, you know, is like beyond me.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes our faults or our, you know, our faults and flaws make us the most interesting. I think there's an actress, I'm trying to think, I forget now whether it's Kate Blanchett or maybe it's the one who plays Bella in the Twilight series, but it seems like, you know, her fans don't like, you know, they don't like these women anymore, and I think it's because they come across as too perfect or, too much for us to have to live up to.
Absolutely, and no connection, because we don't feel that way in our when we're walking around living our lives.
Yeah, you know, because we never feel like we're pretty enough or thin enough or have enough money or enough whatever, you know. But
absolutely.
That in itself, you know, that's us trying to achieve maybe the unattainable, you know, rather than just liking ourselves the way we are in our imperfection.
Well, I know we can certainly relate to each other much better through imperfection than we can perfection.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't know. I think we're all works in progress. You know, honestly, who can say they aren't? But anyway,
fulfill your life.
Yeah. Well, I know you wanted to also talk about the hand.
Yes. Well, that hand is you. So I really said what I needed to say about that. It's just
okay.
Tracy. Chemical marriage. Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah. I wanted to. Yeah. Wherever you want to go with this.
Great. Alchemical marriage is a large piece. It's about 6 foot tall, about 30 inches wide. And it's about three levels of marriage. And the first story I found in Theater of the Imagination by Clarissa Pinkola Estes. And
mm-hmm.
it was about, there were kind of snippets of it. And it was about the three fates, the weaver, the cutter, and the spinner of the fabric of life. And they're initiating the bride and groom into the wedding mystery. And I took one section of that story, because it's a pretty big story. There's an initiation of the bride separately by the three fates. And then at some point in the story, I think it's called the Three Bears. It certainly didn't come to us that way, but at some point in the story, the bride and the groom decide to get married, but the groom doesn't want the three ugly old women at his wedding. And so the groom has to go through the same initiation that the bride does to become soulful. So anyway, you've got these three fates, and I picked one section of the story for my piece, and it was about the instructions on their wedding night. And I thought they were so important, and it was about looking into each other's eyes when they made love, so that they would see who really lives inside of each other, the soulful one, the one you will always love and forgive. Can you imagine receiving instructions for conscious relationship? I don't think that happens in our culture.
No, not at all. I'm thinking about when I got married for the first time, I was... I was a Catholic, so they made you go to a priest, of all things, who knows nothing about marriage, and I don't know, go through some sort of class, and, it was mostly about don't fight over the bills, is what I remember. I'm thinking, mm-hmm. sure, that's helpful, but what about the rest?
Exactly. That's true.
So, yeah, this is a beautiful piece. It looks like up at the top, is that like a sun or a moon? And then you see
I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to the next part, too. So the next level of marriage that I chose was the alchemical marriage. And that's the marriage of the masculine and the feminine within your own being. So someone like Dr. Carl Jung would say that the masculine part of ourselves is the one that goes out and manifests, makes stuff happen. But it's the feminine part of ourself that thinks up the things to happen. So when you have that marriage within you, you're not looking outside yourself to become a whole being. Mm-hmm. And we don't operate on that principle in the United States. We operate on the Platonic idea of the split of parts, where you go out and look for your other half. But if we operated on this model, one whole being related to another whole being, it would be an entirely different culture.
Talk about that a little bit more.
Okay. So if I'm not looking for you to complete me, you in terms of me, I'm not looking for a mate to complete
mm-hmm.
me, that I actually fulfill that within my own being, by my becoming aware, by trying things, by, instead of feeling like I can't do something, I can do something. I live in an RV on the road, and I remember when I first went out on the road, I had a truck and a trailer, and my trailer came off the hitch. And a guy came by, and he said, "I'll put that back on the hitch for you." And I said, "No, what I would really like you to do is direct the traffic so I don't get killed. And then I'm going to put it back on the hitch. Because if I can't learn how to do that, I don't belong out here."
Mm-hmm.
But, sometimes as a woman, I've felt like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And what I try to do is say, you can. You need to just try. And if you can't do it the first time you try, go get some instructions on how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's like lots of people that will teach you how.
And so what do you think, Teresa, that we don't do that? How does that you know, how does that affect us in a negative way? I mean, does it sort of set us up? Yeah, when we don't do it. I mean, does that sort of, you know, put expectations on other people, and then when they don't meet those expectations, we're disappointed?
Okay, that's a big one right there. That's a huge one right there. So I'm going to take care of this part of our lives, and you're going to take care of that part of our life. And when you don't take care of that part of a life, then we've got problems in the relationship.
Or, I mean, and that could almost be not even just marriage. That could just be your friendships, you know.
Exactly. Your
job. You know, your relationship in your church and your job.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You
and
know,
so every time. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, so often I think we as women, we put people on pedestals. You know, maybe it's other women, maybe it's other people, and then when suddenly they don't fulfill all of our needs, it's about, oh, that person's horrible, you know.
Right. When the need shouldn't have been placed on the other person to begin with.
Right.
In my opinion.
Right,
and,
right.
And, you know, I have to say it was hard to learn to be self-sufficient. And it doesn't mean I don't accept help, but it does mean that I'm not afraid to try to do something on my own. And once we can do something on our own, then it's possible to do all kinds of things because we've got some, you know, prior experience with having a success there or a success there so we can move on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we bring our, when especially our daughters, but I'm sure our sons too, if we learn how to do that, to really become true, whole beings, then that's what we're telling our children just by being who we are. Not telling them, but by being that actual thing.
And don't you think, too, Teresa, when we become that being, when we are happy with ourselves, when we can see, when we can appreciate our accomplishments, when we have joy, when we have love, you know, whether it, you know, and by love, I mean very broadly. I'm not just talking about a soulmate or something. We, you know,
right.
When we're happy with our life, don't you think it makes it a lot easier for us to not sweat the small stuff, to not project onto other people, to not, you know, be disappointed and a victim and, you know, all of these other negative things that sometimes creep into our psyche when maybe we just aren't happy with our own life.
You know, that is so true, Karen. That is so true. It's so much easier to blame somebody else if I'm not happy. You know, if I'm going to blame myself, then you know, then I now become responsible for how I live and how I feel and what my life is like. And if I do that, then, you know, I'm going to be beating myself up. It would be infinitely better to try to beat somebody else up. But,
right.
You know, that continues that never being happy. As long as we live that way, we're never going to be able to have the life we want. I mean, I'm a happy woman, a really happy woman. And I paid for that. You know, I had to learn how to let go and do things that I was afraid I would be incapable of doing. But I found a lot of joy in just trying stuff. And if you can give a little helping hand to somebody else along the way, that brings me great joy, too.
And maybe even in your failures, you know, maybe even your failures, you know, I don't know, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I'm feeling like you're probably a woman who even got a lot out of us times when you've stumbled.
I probably got more out of when I stumbled than when I succeeded. Because you know, the failures... And you get up tomorrow morning after you've had a miserable day, and you're still alive. So you're still here, and you still got to do it again. And I've discovered, well, you know, I'm probably going to wake up again, and I'm probably going to have another shot at this.
Yeah.
So that takes me into this third level of marriage I want to talk about. So now that we've gotten up through the alchemical marriage, which is cross-cultural, that last part, which is a kind of sun or flower, whatever you want to call it, That's what I call about being married to the divine. And I'm not speaking religion here, although it certainly could be. But I'm speaking when you dedicate your life to something bigger than self. And when that happens in your life, you're on the road to happiness. Because I've discovered that loving is infinitely better, you know, than having somebody love you. It's really nice when somebody loves you, but I'm really happy when I love something else or someone else. And so that's what I started putting my energy in.
I like that. So loving, that could be what, you know, it's like when Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss.
Oh, God, yes. And I loved his books. That's what I feed myself with. When I'm in the studio, I listen to tapes like Joseph Campbell or Carolyn Mace or Clarissa Pinkola Estes or just at the end is, the list is long. I need that kind of food, mental food in my life. I stopped watching television because it just took me down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't listen to the news. I suppose that you know means I'm not up, but somehow you always get to learn the things that you're supposed to learn about what's
just,
going on.
Just
in the world.
Don't vote for Republicans. That's all you need to know. I'm kidding.
Well, we know they don't pay for art, so why go there?
There you go.
Exactly.
It's always the first thing to be cut in schools, isn't it?
Isn't that the truth? I know.
And that's such ignorance, you know. But is it, you know, maybe I give them too much credit, but I often wonder if you know, maybe they know what they're doing, because if they would breed some generations of kids who thought like we're thinking right now, which the arts encourages, they wouldn't have any chance of winning any elections.
No, they would absolutely not. You know, I worked at Cornell University for many years while Isadora was growing up, so that she could have a stable life and I wouldn't be on the road all the time. And I remember professors complaining that that college is turning into something that you're supposed to finish and then you're going to get a good job, when originally college was supposed to teach you how to think. You know, and then when you could think, you could do pretty much anything.
Right.
And I wonder where that idea went.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think there's a you know, maybe, I don't know if we're getting off track or not, maybe we're not, but I think there's a strategy out there to have the majority of us not be able to think, because if we thought, would we tolerate, if enough of us understood what was going on, would we tolerate it, you know?
No.
Deep stuff. Deep stuff, Teresa. This is good. I mean, it really has so many different layers, you know, so many different layers to it. So any of the other pieces, you wanted to speak to, cause we, you know, maybe have about 10 minutes left.
Okay. I want to do two more pieces. This is a very brief little story. This is the cover of my book and, it's called Open Doors. And the short little haiku or whatever you want to call it that goes with it, you have a door that's open to another door that's open to another door, and it kind of looks sort of monastery-like, and I always want to go in there. You know, it's just very exciting. But, you know, once you take that path, it's like once you get a little bit of knowledge, you can't get rid of it. You can't say, oh, I didn't know that. So this little reading is about open doors. This is an invitation to life and its remarkable journey. And part of us aches for this interior life. And if we hesitate too long, the path gets harder to find.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that, you know, even there have been so many times in my life when my soul begged for me to feed it. And I said, not now. Or, you know, or I would get married and get busy.
Yeah, with just everyday stuff.
Yeah, everyday stuff. Just, and the other little piece I just want to talk about just briefly is called This Dance We Do. And it's a picture about a couple, and they are not facing each other. They're back to back, and their heads are sort of touching each other. And they're doing this dance, and two of their hands are just touching at the bottom. And I just want to say a couple lines of it. It's called This Dance We Do With Each Other Produces Not Only Heat, But Also Consciousness. I look for you, but when I found you, it was mostly work mixed with a little part of ecstasy. And the last line in the poem is, We look so mundane, my love. How could I possibly have known that we were sacred? Forgive me. And our relationships are really sacred, whether they're our friends or our spouses or our jobs. They're sacred relationships. We have these contracts. And we're not supposed to be, joined at the hip. We're supposed to be two independent beings that are building something together.
You just touch so many things with these thoughts, because if we really thought of our relationships that way, why wouldn't the world be a different place, you know?
Wouldn't it indeed? Yes. Absolutely.
Wow. Teresa, I am so glad we had a chance to talk. Your work is just incredible. I'm so thank you for sending me your book. Is this, I'm sure this is something that that listeners can get. Is it still available?
Yes, yep. They can go right on my website and order it right off my website from my Etsy store. You just hit the book, it goes to Etsy, and you can pay. They send me an email, and I ship it right out to you.
Well, these are incredibly beautiful, and, I'm tempted to ask, what's the price range of your pieces?
It's $24.90. They go everywhere from $25, I think, of the healer. Well, I think the healer is $40, up to $12,000 for the alchemical marriage piece.
Well, so there's something in there for everyone.
For everyone. And I have a lot in mid range, at $175 or $600 or right around the $1,000 mark.
These are incredibly beautiful.
Pieces.
I don't actually have anyone after you, so let me just ask you real quick. The initiation, I'm intrigued by that one. Is it the bronze color like the other ones?
Yes. Now, that particular one is sold out.
Okay.
That one in my book. I think it even says that in the book. But I just finished a new piece that is very similar to that. And I'm talking about a brand new piece. I just finished it last week. And it's about a woman. You have this woman, and she's can feel the power and the calmness in her. You know, I always think the most powerful people are really calm, not agitated.
Yeah.
Because you can think a lot better when you stay very calm. And on both sides of her, it's called channeling light. On both sides of her are six symbols, so there are 12 symbols altogether, and it's very much like that initiation that we come into manifestation carrying all the things, all the tools that we need to live here and thrive here, and we've got to find them, and we've got to sight, for instance. We can see beyond what just the surface of things are. There's a little egg in it, and the egg has the idea of all new things being born. The serpent, the symbol of wisdom. I mean, we have carry every one of these things with us. So right in the middle of the top of her head at the piece, there's a light streaming into her. And I personally think that anyone can get that, especially through meditation. But at the bottom of them is a circle of women. And the women do not have faces because they can be anyone, okay? But we come in with a community to manifest our life through. And that community we choose. And so it's another empowering women piece. And that is for sale. It's not on my website yet, but it shall be there. I haven't even gotten it shot yet. I think it gets shot next week, and then it'll go on the site.
It's beautiful. Well, you know, what you said made me think about something, you know, just kind of drawing a correlation. You said that you thought some of the most calm, what did you say, the people who were the most calm were what?
Are the most powerful.
Are the most powerful. And, and you know, maybe this is a crazy analogy, but I have to tell you, when Barack Obama first took office, and believe me, you know, I have my issues, you know, but when he first took office, I really felt like he was trying to wield power differently, like in a way we hadn't seen before. You know, George Bush was all about, you either with me or you're against me, you know, the guy with the cowboy, you know, with the biggest stick. And, you know, we see that going on in the news right now, you know, let's be bullies and that will make everything right. And but then you had Barack Obama, who had sort of had this calm reserve about him, and that would just make the right wing go a little crazy, because they equated that with weakness, you know.
Oh, and it's exactly the opposite.
Yeah. And here we go again. It feels like, to me, it's like the old. How would you say it? It's you know, maybe there's lots of ways to say it. Maybe the Piscean age dying and taking the Aquarian
Absolutely.
Age taking its place. You know, we don't need these blithering idiots who think the only way to solve anything is with bullets and bombs, that there are other ways to actually solve problems and see the world besides, you know, might makes right, you know. And being calm and calculating is not weakness.
It certainly isn't. And, you know, I think women are going to be the leaders in this.
And but yet they say we're the emotional ones.
Yeah, well, they ought to try a house full of kids.
Yeah, they
or
get to go to work.
Things that we put up with.
Yeah, and them too. You know, put up with the house full of kids all day, and then you know, have to pick up their dirty underwear when they come home. Oh, I'm being horrible. I'm being horrible. I have a wonderful husband of 30 years, you know, who is the wind beneath my wings. But we're talking archetypes here.
Yes, we are. We are. Yes.
Well,
yeah,
Teresa,
Go ahead.
No, you.
I was gonna say, there's a whole new style of living that has come in, and you know, whether people are aware of it or not, it's going to be quieter. It's going to be more powerful. It's going to have more wisdom in it, and it's not going to be about just making money and screwing people.
Right.
And
well, that's
we're
good.
Part of that now. Yes, it's wonderful. I love the fact that we're living now and that there are so many of us out there that are working towards this. And
you know,
it's
I'm going to have
every
a woman
different fashion.
Well, you know, I'm going to have a woman on my show in a few weeks who specializes in culture in Japan, and there is a new wave, and maybe this is not new news to other people, it was new news to me, but there is a shift that's happening in Japan with men and women. Women are becoming very empowered. In fact, they are finding even sites around Japan that they now are equating with female empowerment, sacred sites. And the men are sort of, some of them, are retreating into what they call herbivore men. They are not into this predator capitalism. They are not into measuring themselves by how much they have in their bank book. They are into following their bliss and doing things that make them happy. And if they sort of look like a curmudgeon, you know, and they look a little bit disheveled, who cares? They don't care.
Who
they are
cares?
Not trying.
That's right.
You know, they're not trying to meet some cultural idea of who they're supposed to be or what they're supposed to be.
And that's the world I want to live in, and I want to want to be, you know, I want to help make.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Teresa, you are an incredible artist, and I am glad you are out there in the world. Thank you. And thank you for raising the wonderful daughter you raised and for your wisdom and for
wonderful.
The beauty you bring. And I'm so glad you contacted me, and I've so enjoyed our chat.
Well, I have too, Karen. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And let's just mention your website once more. It's Teresa Morehouse, Teresa without an H, T-E-R-E-S-A, Morehouse, M-O-O-R-E-H-O-U-S-E. Please, listeners, treat yourself to these images. And Teresa, I don't know whether you want to do this or not, but if there's a way for you to post any of your images on my Facebook page or something, please do. And then maybe listeners can find you that way, you know, if they know my Facebook page, you know.
I will. I will make that happen.
Okay. Well, thank
all
you
right.
so very much. And good luck
thank
with all your pieces. Where are you headed? Are you going to be hitting the road anytime soon?
I'm already on the road. I've been doing shows almost every weekend. I'm in Florida, so I do both coasts. I'm in southern Florida, and then when it gets warm here, I just start working up the coast and then into Michigan and Chicago and St. Louis, and, you know, I'm just on the road.
Okay. Well, safe travels to you, and I have a feeling wherever you go, you really bring joy and you encourage people to be thoughtful.
And that, yes, that is my mission. Absolutely. Thank you.
There you go. Thank you so much. Good night.
Take care. Good night.
Well, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed that as much as I did. And we are going to take a little break right now because you know what? I promised you I was going to read that that short message from my book, but I have to go grab it. So I apologize for not being better prepared, but you know what? It gives you a chance to listen to some music beyond just a little cut. I am going to go ahead and play here. Let's see, what am I going to play for you? How about Alea Deo's Awaken? Because you know what? That's what we're talking about, aren't we? We are talking about awakening our consciousness to a new way of living and being in the world. So enjoy this for a couple minutes while I go grab my book, and then I will be back to share all the other news with you and some other things I think you'll be interested in. So don't go away. Enjoy Alea Deo's Awaken.
Time to awaken. To your call inside. Time to awaken. Time to awaken.
I am back. Thank you for your patience. That actually didn't take as long as I thought. So I am ready here to go into the next half of the show. We are going to just cross the threshold here. And before I get to that excerpt from my book, resistance is not futile. In fact, it is necessary. I wanted to just make a few announcements. The first is, if you have not heard about it yet and you're in Southern California, please save the date, because Phyllis Chesler is coming to the Goddess Temple of Orange County. We have the great privilege to meet and greet her on Friday, April 25th at the Goddess Temple of Orange County in Irvine. In Southern California, she will be discussing her memoir, An American Bride in Kabul, and that's Afghanistan, if you're not, up on your geography, and also her great classic, so important to us all, Woman's Inhumanity to Woman. Details to follow, so stay tuned. I will keep telling you more, or if you'd like to be added to my mailing list, just email me. You can find out about all of Phyllis's work. She is an incredible foremother, an incredible feminist who has been around for a long time, and she does not mince words. You know, she is courageous, and she sheds light on things that need to be talked about, even when they're uncomfortable, even when it's controversial. So I myself am looking forward to seeing her in person. I've interviewed her here on the show. She is in my upcoming anthology, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape the World. And now she will be here in Southern California. So we are very excited. And speaking about the Goddess Temple of Orange County, they are having their Priestess College series coming up. The first class was in February, and I believe they have one every month. And the next one is March 29th, and it's on goddesses. And yes, it looks like there's one in April, May, June, July, all the way through February. And all of the classes stand on their own, can be taken as a single class or as a series. And they're all a prerequisite for ordination. And the classes are usually on Saturdays from 1 to 3. If you're interested, please contact the Goddess Temple of Orange County, and you can find out more. It's $30 a class, and you can pay by cash, check, or credit card, and with the class comes complimentary libations and chocolate just for fun. So it's 12 classes, one every month for adult women over 18, taught by presiding priestess Ava, the priestess initiates Amina, Mata, Raven's Eye, Noel, and senior priestesses of the temple. So if that's something you've been wanting to do and you're in Orange County or within driving distance, you might want to take advantage of that. Also wanted to share with you something that came across from Karen Berg at the Kabbalah Center in Los Angeles. Some of you may have heard me say before, my husband and I took some classes there because I was really intrigued, because so much of the Kabbalah mysticism really is in alignment with goddess spirituality, not the patriarchal stuff, of course, but they are into the wheel of the year and into energies and, you know, following the new moons, and, you know, they even do hand readings and face readings, and you know, so much of the stuff just felt like it was so much in sync with goddess spirituality. And I like how they teach people to really try to be their, you know, the best self that they can be, and it's about sharing and caring and you know, ideals of the sacred feminine, really. So anyway, Karen Berg, I'm on the mailing list, and they send along a daily consciousness thing to sort of, you know, keep us on track, keep our eye on the goal of trying to be a better person, a more spiritual person. And sometimes I like to read what she sends along because, I don't know, for one reason or another, it sort of, you know, tugs at my heart or my mind. So anyway, this one that came across recently was called A Whole World Unto Ourselves, and it goes like this. This is by Karen Berg. We may not realize it, but life is fleeting and passes like the blink of an eye. So it seems strange that so often we act as if we have many years to live and as though our thoughts and actions don't have any effect or consequences. But the truth is that a single positive action, an action of certainty, can affect the whole world. How? Consider this. Each person has many roles in this life, sister, brother, mother, father, employer, employee, and so on. Every life affects the lives of all of those in the same circle, and what happens in that circle extends outward incrementally in a ripple effect. Ultimately, the whole world can be affected by a single person, and each person is a whole world unto him or herself. Therefore, we need to fully understand that every action we take, everything we do, connects with someone who will inevitably be affected by it. Food for thought the next time we go running around willy-nilly, doing something we shouldn't do, saying something we shouldn't do, thinking something we shouldn't think. Also, Dennis Campbell, he's somebody I read on Facebook a lot. He had a quote on his Facebook page by Maya Angelou I wanted to mention. She says, and thanks to Dennis, I have it here to share with you, words of wisdom from the poet Maya Angelou. Each time a woman stands up for herself without knowing it possibly, without claiming it, she stands up for all women. I'll read it again. Each time a woman stands up for herself without knowing it possibly, without claiming it, she stands up for all women. Kind of get the idea all of these things I talk about all fit into each other, you know, hand in glove. I want to thank Elizabeth, who sent me some nice words about my book, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations. She said, 108 is such a wealth of info. You jam-packed it with such great tips. I refer to sections before I go somewhere. I think you are offering a much-needed integrated perspective on goddess spirituality and politics. It is astounding how people just assume religion means Christian and world religions and leave out all else in politics. Quest on. Thank you, Elizabeth. I appreciate that. And I also was very glad to get another great review, this time on my brand new book, Goddess Calling. This one was from a woman, Wendy Stokes, who is actually over in the UK. And if you'll indulge me for a moment, I'd like to read the review before we get on to the rest of what I'd like to share with you tonight, including a letter one of my listeners wrote to the Pope. But this is the review by Wendy Stokes, and it's on her MBN website. She says, this book, Goddess Calling, has been glowingly reviewed and praised by Jean Houston, Barbara Walker, Susanna Budapest, and many other greats of the women's spirituality movement of our time. I opened it with considerable excitement to drink in its beauty and riches and enjoy its poetry, delight, and magic. The author provides here a useful manual to explore the many aspects of the sacred feminine and to access inspiration, encouragement, and empowerment not just on a personal level, but also to create a wisdom circle, a community in which rituals can be held to further explore this dynamic and transformational spiritual path, especially for women. It's not realistically possible to exclude spirituality from politics because politics is the way in which we are governed and also conditioned. Under patriarchy, women have been in a subservient role to men. Men have acted as intermediary between themselves and a male authoritarian godhead who applauds hierarchy and oppression. Under patriarchy, there is no suitable role for spiritual leadership by women. Yes, theology with an O. Yes, not theology with an A. Reverend Tate, an ordained minister, tells us about the goddess as deity archetype and ideal, and through devotion to the divine feminine, we can reshape our personal and societal values and cultures. She explains how we can create our own services and rituals to honor the goddesses of the seasons or specific goddesses for particular purposes, such as fighting injustices that are inflicted on our sisters around the world. These can be simple acts of devotion with lighting a candle and reciting an opening prayer, then providing readings, affirmations, meditations, chants, storytelling, and the sharing of experiences. Beautiful prayers are provided with meditations and other useful material to support the work of the group. Reverend Tate guides us in the conversation of our unique planet's precious resources, a political stance which is at the heart of goddess and earth-based spirituality. Whether you are called to teach, write, campaign, heal, inform, and raise awareness, or give of your time, skills, or monetary capacities, the path of the goddess is one of the most important and enjoyable a woman can take. This book will help to awaken you to the goddess by creating a group for ceremonies and meetings to honor the goddess in all her many forms. Heed the calling, trust the journey, make a difference. Thank you so much, Wendy. Thank you so much. I'm glad you got it. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Now, Jeanette Clancy, a good friend of mine who has been on the show a few times, she was on most recently talking about the dangers and damage of sexist God talk. She is a progressive Christian who is trying very hard to change the church from the inside. And she's had many letters printed in the, I think it's called the NCR, I think it's National Catholic Register, something like that. She actually just recently wrote a letter to Pope Francis, which I think I read to you. But NCR posted her letter recently that she wrote in relationship to Pope Francis and ordaining women and all of that, and it was actually printed in not online, but on their editorial pages in the hard copy, and I just thought I would read it to you because I thought it was so well written and so to the point. She's a great writer and she really said this well. So this is Jeanette Clancy, author of God is Not Three Guys in the Sky, her letter that was published in the National Catholic Register. She says, in response to Pope Francis exhorting religious leaders to stop forming, quote, little monsters forbidding this and that, unquote, I recommend an obvious solution, ordain women. Women fit precisely the wishes of Francis for ministers. They work at the periphery and among the poor in real contact with them. Lay women and religious women, whom Francis snubbed by following Benedict's example, opened hospitals, health and nutrition centers, schools, homeless shelters, and counseling centers. They continue to rub shoulders with people at the margins, experiencing their desperation. They are acquainted with reality by experience in numbers that should embarrass male clerics. Roman Catholic women priests already carry out Francis's wish of reforming clericalism by offering healing to cast-off members of society, the ones receiving Francis's public compassion. They exemplify his desire for clerics to eschew the career ladder. They demonstrate the humble but courageous and compassionate, heartfelt ministry that Francis calls for. Pope Francis recognizes the illness of clerical culture. He recognizes the need for structural renewal and reform in the Catholic Church. Would that his imagination could transcend restrictions set by the two previous pontiffs! Exclamation point. Would that he could see the obvious solution, allow women who already model the ministry he commands to do so with full authority! Exclamation point. Thank you, Jeanette. Thank you for your wisdom. And another woman that I am so glad you are out there. Thank you. Thank you. Well, let's see. I promised this excerpt from my book, Resistance is Not Futile, Connecting Goddess Spirituality to Star Trek. So sit back for a moment, grab your cup of tea. It's not very long, but this is chapter 17, and it goes like this. Before Ayn Rand became a household name, or Michael Douglas as Gordon Gekko in the movie Wall Street captivated the masses with his greed as good ideals, giving license to callously cheat and exploit, we believed in the progressive values of the movies and television series Star Trek. Remember in Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan in 1982 when Spock's dying words to Captain Kirk were, quote, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, unquote. A few years later, in Star Trek First Contact, 1996, Captain Picard explains their worldview in the future when he says, quote, the acquisition of wealth is no longer the driving force in our lives. We work to better ourselves and the rest of humanity, unquote. In fact, Star Trek's mission was one of exploration and humanitarianism rather than the right-wing rejection of science and the modern world, or the Ayn Rand values to spurn collectivism and altruism. That said, I wonder how many have considered how much more Trekkies and goddess advocates have in common. Well, let's see. Let's start with how goddess ideals are about the we and the us rather than the I and the me. Sounds synonymous with the aforementioned words of Spock, does it not? Goddess advocates have talked about a gift economy rather than the predator capitalism of Gordon Gekko, which causes vast income disparity and massive suffering of the 99%. Women certainly were equal in the world of Star Trek as they are in goddess spirituality. Sexism, vaginal probes, or pay inequity would not be a reality in Earth's future, a la Gene Roddenberry, creator of Star Trek. Number one, the early science officer before Mr. Spock comes to mind, as does Janeway, captain of the Enterprise. Women were allowed to break out of traditional roles, and never did I see an episode where the church or the state dictated women's rights. Goddess, by her many names and faces across the globe, is the poster girl for diversity and tolerance. Think back to Captain Kirk and Uhura's first interracial kiss and the multicultural Star Trek cruise throughout the series. In fact, Earth was part of the Federation of Planets, which existed under a central government based on principles of universal liberty, rights, and equality. Planets shared their resources in cooperation, as in how the assistance from the Vulcans enabled Earth to lift itself out of poverty and suffering from World War III. You did not see all this fear or devaluation of the other. With our finite resources, we can no longer continue to exploit Gaia. We must reject unfettered growth and opt for the development of our species. In Earth's future, Star Trek suggested humans were left to pursue their passions and become the best version of themselves they might become. Considering planet's shared resources, I cannot imagine in Star Trek multinational corporations would be allowed to continue to exploit the masses. In fact, the resources of Gaia would probably become free. Imagine not paying for electricity or gas and multinational corporations prevented from poisoning or stealing water from indigenous people. Remember the Prime Directive? The Star Trek crew was not to interfere with the development of cultures they discovered. There were no crusades, inquisitions, missionaries, or religious institutions forcing their dogma on people or the state as the one true way, nor was there any legislating of a certain religious conformity. Captain Kirk did not beam off the ship and say, we'll help you if you accept Jesus as your savior, or we'll give you aid if you teach sexual abstinence as the only form of birth control. I'm sure this will get you thinking of the many episodes of morality within the long-running and beloved Star Trek series. One that stands out for me was when Captain Kirk and his crew encountered two groups of people who were at war. The skin of one species was black on the right and white on the left, and the other people had skin white on the right and black on the left. As they battled each other for supremacy, each devaluing the other, viewers were encouraged to see the folly of racism in our time and think about how society treated minorities. There were many such episodes, and the social and cultural issues presented by Gene Roddenberry are still ones we wrestle with today, but somehow the scripts taught us to challenge our thinking and appeal to the better angels of our natures rather than discrimination, fear, exploitation, and greed. The world was not perfect, but there was a solidarity among people. In a sense, their priority was the common good. What was your favorite episode? What values did Star Trek teach you or your kids? How did the series make you feel as you saw the bravery and selflessness of the crew, often risking themselves for others? Were they your heroes and heroines? Did you aspire to be like them? Star Trek may no longer be aired in prime time on major networks, but with recent movies, the franchise is far from buried and forgotten. I certainly remember when the series ideology held sway within our hearts and minds and influenced our future. We can probably credit Star Trek for inspiring our flip phones and computer tablets, among other things. Can we afford to bury the morality Star Trek taught us, or shall we revive it? So many of us yearn for a world akin to Star Trek, and not just for the cool gadgets. Can we remember when the values of Gene Roddenberry and the massive numbers of Trekkies showed the way and held the promise for the future? What will it take for the collective consciousness of all Earthlings to embrace those values of caring and sharing, of justice and equality, of science and humanitarianism? In Star Trek, we defeated the Borg. How do Americans unplug from the groupthink and hive mentality of fear-mongering, discrimination, divisiveness, greed, and fundamentalism? Perhaps we just have to remember how we felt watching the crew of the Enterprise and why we held those women and men in such high esteem. Resistance is not futile. In fact, peaceful resistance is imperative. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. That was Arms of the Mother by Abigail Spinner McBride. And that reading that I just shared with you was from my new book, Goddess Calling. And guess what? It is out now. You can order it from Amazon, and it's in their warehouse for delivery. And I hope you enjoyed Resistance is Not Futile, drawing comparisons and similarities between the sacred feminine and the world of Star Trek. Dear listeners, you know, I hope you will help me by supporting this new book. Go to Amazon or your local bookseller or myself. I have copies. And learn more about how the sacred feminine is liberation theology, how the great She sets us free as deity, archetype, and ideal. And, you know, I'll be having two book launch parties in Southern California. One is at the Goddess Temple of Irvine on April 19th. That's the really big bash with Rowan Storm facilitating drumming, rhythm, and balance. I'm going to be giving a slide presentation on Washington, D.C. as a new goddess pilgrimage site. There's going to be chanting and singing with the Circle Singers and Sacred Belly Dance by Maria of MK Entertainment. Then the following Saturday, April 26th, I'm giving my presentation in Malibu at Olandor, the Center for Emerging Renaissance. I hope you'll come. Or, you know, if you're not here in Southern California, invite me to visit your city or town and talk to your group about this vital information of the divine feminine as a template for sustainable living. Change for the many of us, justice, peace, harmony, and balance. Remember, dear listeners, we are the cognitive minority. We are ahead of the curve in our thinking, and we're working toward everyone else catching up. So stay motivated, stay activated, find your sacred roar. Sa, Sikim, Sahu. And yes, please click the follow button on my show page so you don't miss news of the wonderful guests that come on the show and share their insight each week. That's the first of the three F's I hope you will remember. The second F is to become a friend of the growing family of Voices of the Sacred Feminine listeners across the state and across the globe. And third, the third F I'd like you to think about stands for Facebook. Please like my pages on Facebook, the Voices of the Sacred Feminine page and pages for, the radio show page, Voices of the Sacred Feminine radio page. And I also have a page for each of my books, Walking in Ancient Path, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations. I read a review earlier that came in just a couple days ago. And the new one, I keep talking about Goddess Calling. And you know what? I talk about it so much because my publisher requires me to. I have to eat, sleep, and breathe this book for the next 6 months. So if you go to my Facebook page for Walking in Ancient Path and you tell me you heard that I'm giving away books to the first three listeners I hear from, you might just be a winner of that award-winning book, Walking in Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. It was a finalist in the USA National Best Books. It discusses how one can work with the divine feminine energy and helps one get ideas about traveling to sacred sites, doing ritual, being inspired by goddess. You know, I actually make myself a little vulnerable and say some pretty revealing things, sharing some personal and magical stories that happened when I believe goddess was really listening and played a part in my life, you know, changing the path I was on. And Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, that was my first book. It received rave reviews because, you know what, there's still nothing like it between two covers out there. So many places, sacred spots of goddess between two covers, living in ancient traditions. So whether you're an actual traveler to sacred sites and faraway lands or you travel there from your armchair, this book can do it for you. I bring it back home to you and raise awareness of the many diverse faces of the divine feminine across continents and cultures, as well as herstory and what's happening in these places today. Traveling to sacred sites, standing on her sacred landscape was truly, truly life-changing and validated all of this for me. So, listeners, as I close tonight's show, I want to thank you again for being with me, and I want to say this because I never, I think, can say it enough. I hope you don't get tired of saying it, of hearing me say it. I know some of you ask me to read it more often, so I have to assume you like hearing it. Maybe it, you know, kind of pumps you up a little bit. It kind of does me. Adversaries of the sacred feminine tried to sweep away awareness and knowledge of her for all time. And with that sweeping away, when the great she was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy, of selfish and disconnected men and their war gods, women in their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority, well, they became thwarted, repressed, taboo, diminished, disrespected. That's why here on the show I'm dedicated to recovering the great she, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal, as I know you are too. Yes, you and I and our like-minded friends, we intend to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women and men, to throw off the shackles. We are going to look under every rock, behind every locked door, peer into the abyss of the past so we know why things are the way they are, how they have come to be so turned on their head and so unnatural, and we're going about setting things right. Why? Well, because if we want to save ourselves and Mother Earth, our beloved Gaia, then we have no other choice. If we want to live in a world of balance, harmony, wholeness, sanity, equity, fairness, and partnership, it is women and our like-minded brothers armed with ideals of the sacred feminine who will set things back on course. And three mottos of the show. First, all truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. And third, it is accepted for being self-evident. That's from the 19th century German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer. Second, from Gandhi, more contemporary. First, they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. I think those quotes so accurately reflect what we as the cognitive minority are doing. And you know what? It's not easy. So this third quote from Monique Wittig is another of my favorites. She says, "There was a time when you were not a slave. Remember that. You walked alone, full of laughter. You bathed bare-bellied. You say you have lost all recollection of it. Well, remember. You say there were no words to describe this time. You say it does not exist. But remember. Make an effort to remember. Or failing that, invent." Yes, indeed, that is exactly what we are doing, my dear friends. So thank you so very much for tuning in with me again this week. I hope you didn't miss me too much last week, but I missed you. I hope you went to the archives and dug into some old shows that maybe you hadn't heard before, because you know what? They don't get old. You know, it's not like they have an expiration date. All of the things that my wonderful guests have said are still relevant, still important. And next week, I have another great show for you. Next Wednesday, I am going to have a wonderful woman on who I think you are going to really enjoy. Her name is, I want to say it right, Greta Roningen, and we're going to be talking about the spirituality of the Beguines, or Beguines. I'm going to have to figure out how to pronounce that. These were Flemish women from the 13th century who were the first women's movement of love. I think it's probably Beguines, but I'll find out. And my second guest next week, we have Gus Dizarega with us. He has been on the show before, but I invited him back because he has a new book out, and it's called Fault Lines, The Culture War, and the Return of the Divine Feminine, which is an in-depth study of the crisis in American society and government from a pagan perspective. He's an awesome guy, and I love his stuff. I love his politics. So I invited him back on the show to talk about his new book. So that about does it for tonight, listeners. Remember, it is Women's Herstory Month, so please do something to celebrate that, even if it is just learning about a woman who has been forgotten, go to my Facebook page. I have some great examples there of some women who I bet you didn't know about who really deserve more recognition. Look at it, you know, print some of these stories out, share it with your friends, share it with your children, or you know what, just share it with yourself. So that about does it tonight. It's been a musical night, hasn't it? More music tonight than usual. So I will close with a short little snippet from Abigail Spinner McBride saying, "Let the way be open," so that our hearts and minds and our consciousness will be in the days ahead. Let the way be open so that we may vibrate at a higher level, so that we may raise our consciousness because it ripples out exponentially. Good night. Have a great week.
Sing through my voice. Play.